We're not going to try to find it by ourselves, though.
No, we will have help. So we're about to pick him up at the Bernalillo exit.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Sissel.
Sissel, I'm John.
Nice to meet you.
So that's John Horning, our tour guide for the day.
Right, yeah, he's the executive director of Wild Earth Guardians.
We are on our way to the heart of the Jemez Mountains. We are going to see if we can find the elusive New Mexico meadow jumping mouse.
Do they actually jump?
They do. These are little mice that are probably about 3 inches long, and their tail's another 4 or 5 inches long, and they can jump about 3 feet.
Whoa. Wow.
They live along rivers and streams. At one time, kind of all across New Mexico, but it's probably gone from 80% of the habitat it used to exist in. Let's get out here.
So we get out of the car, and we're looking out over this green meadow with this kind of winding creek going through it. And you can actually see a picture of it. It's up on our website, kunm.org. And to me, this is beautiful. I think, you know, if I was a mouse, I would love to live here.
There was a hole back there.
No.
Are we looking for holes?
Mouse do not. We are not going to find mice here. You know, they just need habitat that would have been here, but it's not here now.
And pretty soon he shows us evidence of why that is.
We've got some beautiful cow pies here. All of the management plans for cattle grazing along these streams allow the grass to be grazed down to 2 or 3 inches. But what mice need is 33 inches of sedges and rushes and that herbaceous vegetation in order to exist. So we're never going to find mice here because you can see it's been more or less grazed to like a putting green.
So we get back in the car, and after a little hiccup from the local sheriff's office...
You don't want a ticket for $86. Put your seatbelt on, leave it on.
We learned to buckle our seatbelts, but we also moved up to an area just above Fenton Lake. And that looks completely different from the place we just came from.
Right, and part of it is just the geography there. But John Horning's idea is that with some different management practices, a lot more areas could look like this.
Totally different habitat than what we've seen before. I mean, first of all, it's just wet. This whole floodplain is wet. And once this greens up here, this is going to be a little New Mexico jungle along this stream. And this is much better habitat for the meadow jumping mouse.
I like how he says New Mexico jungle.
Yeah.
Sort
yeah.
of an interesting proposition, but...
Right. So the question from John Horning's perspective, of course, is how do you get from A to B? How do you get from that first habitat we stopped at, which he described as a putting green, to this new, very lush habitat where frogs and mice could live? The obvious answer for him is the mouse needs to get listed so that it can have critical habitat designated.
Right, but there is a problem.
So for decades, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service allowed imperiled species to sit in purgatory and wait for the federal protection that they deserved and need in order to recover.
So John Horning gave us about a 15 or 20 minute lesson on how the endangered species process works. And
suffice it to say, it's a multi-step process. And somewhere in there, Fish and Wildlife comes in and says, yes, this plant or animal deserves to be listed as an endangered species, or no, that's not warranted. But then there's this third option called warranted but precluded, which is basically Fish and Wildlife saying, yes, it deserves to be listed, but we've got some higher priorities, and so we just really can't deal with it right now. And plants and animals that are stuck in that kind of limbo are called candidate species.
The meadow jumping mouse was a candidate when Ronald Reagan was president, so it's been a candidate since 1985.
What is it about the mouse that's made its wait that long in particular?
Well, the politics of endangered species protection is controversial, and therefore the Fish and Wildlife Service has been caught up in that political debate and has not taken action that they've needed to.
So basically, in his mind, it boils down to a lack of political will.
Right, but if you ask the Fish and Wildlife Service, they give you a different reason for the delay.
Litigation.
That's Michelle Shaughnessy with the Fish and Wildlife's Southwest region.
The service has a history of our workload being managed by the courtrooms.
So what she means by that is that U.S. Fish and Wildlife, like any federal agency, has a limited amount of funding to do its job. With so much to do, oftentimes things don't happen as quickly as they should, and that results in lawsuits from groups like Wild Earth Guardians. And then Fish and Wildlife has to put money and time into dealing with those lawsuits, and things get even farther behind. And the result has been that there are all these candidate species that have been stuck in this kind of traffic jam. And actually, at this point, the average wait for a candidate species to get listed is 20 years.
So there's this new settlement between Fish and Wildlife Service and two environmental groups, the Wild Earth Guardians and the Center for Biological Diversity. And basically, it's saying these two organizations will lay off on their lawsuits. And in return, the Fish and Wildlife Service will make final decisions on more than 250 candidate species by 2016.
We realized that we were in a sticky place, and here was an opportunity for us to sort of manage our own workload over the next 5 years. So from our perspective, it is a good thing.
Not that it's going to be all holding hands and kumbaya from here on out.
Once a species like the meadow jumping mouse or the yellow-billed cuckoo or the prairie chicken gets listed, you know, the political hot seat will shift from the Fish and Wildlife Service more to the Forest Service or the BLM.
Here might be a good place to stop for a minute and just point out that of those 250 candidate species that are part of this settlement, about 16 of them live in New Mexico. Out of those 16, 12 of them are species that live in and around water. That means that in the coming years, we can expect to see a lot of discussion about how watersheds should be managed differently to accommodate those species, which very likely will get listed. Once a species has been on the candidate list that long, it's fairly likely that it's going to get listed. That means that some of those agencies John Horning mentioned, the Forest Service or the BLM, are going to have to potentially rethink some of their strategies.
Right. And that's definitely making some people like Karen Cowan with the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association very nervous.
I don't think we've seen the real effects of that settlement yet. And we are very fearful of what it will do. The thing that we react so hard against is it's all or nothing. You know, cattle can't be there. And if you find a species, my God, you know, then we're going to have to change the way you do everything. There are those who I think use the act as a weapon to try to remove livestock. People that genuinely care about the land and genuinely care about animals, we can find common ground with.
John Horning's not so sure.
You know, I would argue that this 1% of the landscape along rivers and streams is so valuable for the clean water it provides, the recreational values that it provides, and the fish and wildlife habitat, that I don't think it should be grazed.
To compromise or not to compromise is the big question here.
Yeah, and you can be sure you'll be hearing more of that discussion coming soon to a watershed near you.